Now, and the second thing is that we realize that people always mixed up religion and ethnicity. For example, in the laws that I studied, Sikhism was considered to be an ethnic and a racist legislation rather than a religious one. So after a lot of arguments, I put forward in my report that the test of racism, how it is different to religion, is that you can't change your color and your race or your ethnicity, but you can change your religion. And it's a very simple test. But it was very difficult for people in the West to distinguish the distinction between religious rights and racist rights. One is a spiritual kind of adherence, which you can criticize if you wish to. And the other is a physical one, which if you criticize, you're actually criticizing somebody's physique. So I think that criticism of religion can be done. But we also came to the conclusion, because in the UN, when this debate was going on, they had a few experts, I was one of them, to sit together and to give recommendations. And there were two recommendations that we made. The first one, three in fact, the first one was that we believe very much the defamation of religion cannot become a human rights law. The second one, what we said was that incitement to violence in the name of religion is a law that is necessary in many societies. Naturally, the threshold of what is incitement will depend from one society to the other, but we recommended that the threshold should be higher rather than lower. And thirdly, a margin of appreciation should be given in each society. And thirdly, what we said was that none of these laws that are there should be discriminatory. For example, in Pakistan, only Islam is protected, while other religions are not protected. So I believe that the protection has to be of people. We have to be able to come to some ground, some common ground on these issues. Not because people are creating violence there, but some people may be genuinely wounded there. I think that, in fact, the violence that occurred only proved the point of the people who made the film. And the filmmakers only helped to give religious right-wing extremists in our countries a cause which was missing for them for many years. And both ways, they empowered the right wing rather than the liberals, who should have been right up front at that particular point, saying both are wrong and nothing justifies violence. And you see now, at least I watched television yesterday, you saw in the General Assembly this debate now from the Human Rights Council has gone up to the General Assembly. And I hope that it will play itself out in a more sensible way so that we do not dent the whole human rights regime just because some people believe that they can go to loot and plunder because some obnoxious character feels that they can hurt the feelings of Muslims by a very vicious recording or a video that they have put up. And there have been arguments that have been made, for example, that freedom of speech is absolute. But I want to remind some of my friends who believe in that. I believe in freedom of speech. I believe in freedom of expression. But I also am aware of the fact that when the genocide took place in Rwanda, it was expression on radio that actually triggered off the genocide in Rwanda. And therefore, when these discussions took place, we felt that that kind of incitement to violence is something that cannot be considered freedom of expression and has to be stopped through legislation. And why I am speaking about this is because I believe that when we are all for the same cause and we are all struggling to build peace, we must all do it with the same kind of mindset. There has to be a meeting of minds amongst peace builders. If I am building peace with a different mindset and you're building it with a different mindset, then the totality of what we are doing and the effectiveness will somehow be lost in breaking those barriers. I also heard yesterday and day before a number of my younger colleagues say, what is it that I can do? I want to do something, but what can I do? Is it going to be of any consequence or any significance or not? But let me say from my experience that I find that in a movement where you are asking for justice, where you're asking for rights, where you're building up peace, you need the frontliners, you need the communicators, you need the grassroots workers, you need civil society policymakers, you need creative thinking, you need people who connect each other, you need people who form networks, you need people whose voice is heard, and you need to pool all these resources. And unless that is not done, no single individual, no single group, no single mind, no single pair of hands can bring peace or justice in this world. We have to strategize, and we have to recognize the fact that each one of us do harbor prejudices. I would be the first to say that I had a number of prejudices. You have to fight those prejudices within yourselves. And I recall that I had to go to South Africa, and I'm ashamed to tell you this here. It's not in my paper, it just came to my mind. I went to South Africa when their first election was held as an election observer. And I was in a homeland, and we were stuck there for 2 weeks on end. And it was a hotel where you got the same menu to eat morning, day, and night. And so one day I thought that, well, I am not going to sit here in this lobby all day. Let me go. There was a little club next door where people played this machine, put some money in and played some machine. So I said, maybe I'll go there and talk to a few people. And I was sitting on my stool, and a man came and sat next to me on a stool. And just unconsciously, I took my bag and put it on my lap. And this man says to me, I may be black, but I don't have an eye on your bag, ma'am. And I realize, what have I done? I didn't mean to, but I have done something involuntary because subconsciously I have a prejudice. And that is when I really began to say, security or no security, I must go out, I must be seen talking to people, and this is not something. You have to get these prejudices out of your system. And we call it mindset. And this is what we have to address. Because mindsets are obviously formed. Who forms these mindsets? Where do they come from? How is it that my mindset is very different to my neighbor's mindset? We live in the same country, we live in the same city, we live in the same vicinity, we see the same television. We've had the same education. But mindset is formed through experiences, through talking to people, and through education, which may not necessarily be a school education, but it has to be a public education. How is it that mindsets of nations begin to be formed differently? And this is the greatest challenge for an activist who is fighting for justice. What, for example, is justice? Is justice what is written in our law books? For example, in my country, we had an argument just a few days ago because in our constitution, a parliamentarian has to be a person who has to be absolutely truthful, and if the person is a Muslim, must say all their five prayers, must fast, must be sagacious. The word used is sagacious. Amin means really honest. And I thought if you apply all those standards to every member of the parliament, there would be no parliament. But lo and behold, while these articles have been there, our judges decided to disqualify one parliamentarian. I'm sure he needed to be disqualified, but to use that very article. So I had to argue that the highest integrity of any institution must be the judiciary, because they're not elected, they're appointed. And one of the criteria of their appointment is their high integrity. Now, if they cannot go through the test of Article 62 and 63, because I'm sure if you applied it to the judges, there would be no benches. And our judges have taken oaths under military governments, they have taken oaths under the Constitution, they have given military governments powers to amend the Constitution. So, but the counter-argument was, but they have done justice according to the book. And I said, yes, that is correct. But according to the laws in Pakistan, you can also punish people to stoning to death. According to the laws of our country, you can also amputate hands, and you can also whip people. But that has fortunately not happened. Why? Because we know that there would be an outrage in society. But again, because these laws are made in the name of religion, nobody can remove them. And in my view, if they actually applied amputation of hands for embezzlement of money, half the upper class of Pakistan would lose their hands. But what is justice is something that we must recognize. Justice is not what laws are about. Justice is where people must live with dignity. Justice is where everybody must have equal rights. Justice is where you recognize that people cannot be tortured, and all the values of human rights, if they are not ingrained in justice, which is written in our books, then that, in my view, is not justice. For example, the Hadood ordinances that we fought against for many years, that is the ordinance which has amputation of hands and stoning to death. And the evidence for that is the evidence of four adult male Muslim, while the victim can be anybody. And particularly in the case of rape, if there are four adult, truthful Muslims standing around and a rape is taking place, I don't see how it can happen. So it's irrational. And not only that, it discriminates against Muslims and non-Muslims, women and men. And to my mind, that is not justice. We also feel very strongly that when we are talking about justice, we have to talk about international justice, justice for all, not for justice for those societies that have developed economically and developed politically. And that is why I come back to my first point, that when one of the arguments we heard in Pakistan after the debacle on the film was that there was an argument that I was hearing over one of the television stations of the West. One of your right-wingers was saying, well, this is what we said. Muslims cannot have democracy. You have Arab Spring and see what happens there. But let me explain to you that precisely because you and your governments have supported our dictators for so long, that there has been no political movements in our countries. The only political activity that was allowed, that could not be taken away, continued in the mosques. So the only organized society, civil society, was that of the clergy and their followers. And how do you expect for 22 years dictators who sit there guarding the interests of the US, not allowing political parties to flourish, not allowing civil societies to organize themselves. And when civil societies even do go there, like in Egypt, to shake it up, it will be the more organized section of society that will take the lead. And so there will be a cycle where you will have more religious parties coming into office. Fortunately, that is not the case in Pakistan, because we are not Arabs. We have had a movement which was against first the British and then for our own country, and no dictator has stayed more than 10 years. The other side of Pakistan, nobody has seen. We have a vibrant civil society. Political parties have been there despite the fact that political leadership has been hung, assassinated, thrown out of the country. But there have consistently been movements for democracy. There have been labor movements, movements for the freedom of press and media, movement for the rule of law. And that is why in Pakistan, whenever there is a rule by the ballot, the right-wingers resist it, because they know that they will never come in through the ballot. They will always come in through the bullet. And that is the reason why this country where I come from is different, and there is always a fear that we may go back to not democracy, but to an anarchy, and then we will have another dictator coming in and saying that the country has gone into anarchy, and therefore I am the only savior for this 130 million people, and please acknowledge me and be grateful to me because I am here to lead you into peace. But that is not the kind of peace we want, because it gives us no justice.